Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Ray, Jeezy, and Will TR out. And we are part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. I hope you all are having a great day. It's been a splendid day for myself. You know, another good day. March Madness has been going down last week. So if you know me, I'm a big fan of March Madness. I'm a big fan of the college tournament, the excitement, the purity of young men playing and women playing a sport that they love in basketball and not playing for the money, but just playing for their team. You saw a bunch of upsets already. Just nothing like March Madness. Ray and I always debate which is bigger, the Super Bowl or March Madness. And at first I was like the Super Bowl, but now it's just the excitement of March and just seeing how these big Cinderella stories and the competition. And you can see like the pressure in terms of some of the favorites and how, you know, pressure burst pipes. I just think that March Madness is one of the dopest things out there in sports, to be honest with you. It's, you know, that. And also, I didn't say last week because it was so busy with so many guests and whatnot. But RIP Scott Hall. If you grew up watching wrestling like I have, and I've become a wrestling fan again. But back in the day, man, shoot. Scott Hall was it. Like, that was Razor Ramon was the man, and he was part of your childhood growing up. Like, when you heard the news that he passed, I'm sure if you were, you know, an 80s baby, you kind of were like, damn, Razor Ramon left this earth. So RIP Razor Ramon. He brought so much. If you grew up a wrestling fan, even if you wasn't a wrestling fan, 9 times out of 10, you were definitely a Razor Ramon fan. Like, there was no, I mean, come on, man. Chico, he stole the guard belt. He had the whole Scarface vibe. I mean, Scarface is one of my favorite movies. So, when I saw that dude, it was a wrap. So, again, RIP to Razor Ramon, Scott Hall. Hope we're praying for his family, praying for him, I mean, his soul and whatnot. You know, rest peacefully, and hopefully, you know, you're in a better place, and you know, there's no more pain in your life. Because if you were a Scott Hall fan, you also know that he had a lot of demons. Just like, you know, a lot of people have things they have to deal with, but he had a lot of demons. So if you were a fan of Scott Hall, you know, pray for him, pray for his family, because again, NWO, you know, and Razor Ramon, it was just lit, man. It was lit. Sorry, y'all. I'm on the phone texting. Also, Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commander Insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today Insider Mike Jones. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the urban sports scene. Also, make sure you subscribe to our urban sports scene YouTube channel as well. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG, Urban, which is at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T would normally say it, but he's not in the building. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. will debate whether the Washington Commanders should still draft a quarterback. Founder of Double Take Sports and 3-Point Convergence, Washington Commanders reporter Karita Parks will jump on the show. Then at 8:20, Kevin Nibley from Talk Nets will join me to talk about the Washington Nationals offseason moves and the retirement. Well, Ryan Zimmerman's jersey being retired. Excuse me. At 8:35, I'll talk March Madness. Finally, in our new segment, HBCU Corner, because you know everybody on the show went to a HBCU. We'll talk with Norfolk State University's men's basketball coach and MEAC Player of the Year, Joe Bryant Jr. All right, right now, I have founder of Double Take Sports and 3-Point Convergence, Washington Commanders reporter, Karita Parks on the line. What's good, Karita?
What's up? Always good to be here.
Oh, it's awesome to have you, Miss Parker. Miss Parks? I'm about to call you Miss Parker. I'm still watching Friday. You know, I was watching Friday not too long ago. It's still in the head. Still in the head. All right, cool.
I understand.
Thank you. Thank you. See, that's why we're homies. You know, I appreciate you too. All right, so Karita, Washington. First off, how you been?
I've been good.
Oh, you've been good? I see you doing big things. Were you at the Super Bowl? You were interviewing. You were doing a lot.
I was doing a lot. I was at the Super Bowl. I was trying to make up for that COVID break.
Okay.
Where nobody was really allowed to get into the Super Bowl activities. Mm-hmm. So I was like, listen, I'm here and I'm about to show up and show out.
Oh, I seen the pictures. You were showing out. I synced it.
Yes.
I synced it. You was having
a good time.
With
your own two eyes.
That's with my own two eyes. You was living it up. You were living the dream. That's what I call it, living the dream.
Definitely. Living the dream for sure.
Definitely, definitely. All right, so, Washington now has Carson Wentz as the quarterback. They also have the 11th pick overall. They went to a projected first-rounder Kenny Pickett's pro day. Do you think this team may still draft a quarterback?
I think it's very possible that they still may draft a quarterback. I see Carson Wentz as the win now option. Uh-huh. But you still have to start planning for your future. I know that there's a possibility and that he could be the future of the franchise, but I don't think you can put all your money on that. Uh-huh. Because the fact of the matter is there are durability issues with Carson Wentz. And it continues to occur. You know, ever since that 2017 injury, it just doesn't seem like he's been able to bounce back and be the same player. Do I think he will be enough to maybe get them to the playoffs? I hope so, and I think so. But like I said, you still have to start planning for your future at this point. Taylor Heineke is the backup. You don't have a lot of options at quarterback.
Why do folks still mention that name? Like, I'm still trying to get over that. Like, fans love mentioning that. Not you. I'm not saying you're a fan. But why do people keep mentioning that name? Like, it could still be a savior. Like, Taylor Heineke has to be mentioned. I don't even get that.
I mean, I didn't say he'd be a savior.
Not you, Karita.
That's another reason why they need to draft a quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. Do you really want that to be your backup? I mean, I know, like, you have a lot of people who have fallen in love with Taylor Heineke. And God bless him. He seems like such a nice guy. And he's such...
That is everything. You said that about Scott. No, Scott Brooks.
It was somebody else. I don't even think it was Scott Brooks, because I go ham on Scott Brooks.
I can't remember who it was, somebody else. A nice guy is never...
It was the kicker. It was the kicker. It was Hopkins. It was Dustin. I know exactly who
it was. Hopkins. Now, you know what? Dustin Hopkins was a nice guy.
Exactly. He was a very nice guy. He was legit.
Usually followed up with a butt.
I know, but he was a legit nice guy. Like, Dustin Hopkins was a legit nice guy. Like, a legit nice guy. When I got to go to games, he was a legit nice guy. But, like, Taylor.
I know, you and me both.
See, look, we want to go with Karita. I ain't trying to go there. But, anyway.
I caught it.
I know you would. But I'm sure he is. But he has so much heart, right? Like, Taylor Heineke has so much heart. But it gets to a point where, God, I'm sick of people just mentioning that. You do need, like, talent. I mean, you have to have some God-given talent to get you to a certain level to be successful in the NFL. I mean, it is what it is. Everybody, like, we watch too much TV. Like, Rudy was cool in college, but you don't see Rudy in the NFL. I'm sorry. It sounds jacked up to say this, but it's the truth.
Well, fans not gonna like me saying this, but I didn't say it. My mom said it.
All right.
She said, she was like, there's a reason Taylor Heineke was going to get his degree.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, so he knows that, like, the opportunity, yes, the opportunity presented his, itself, but he knew, like, that he probably wasn't necessarily a long-term option in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's why he was getting his degree. But it was a dream that came alive for him, and he was, you know, he did what he needed to do when he did it, but he did not work out as a starter for Washington, and that's just what it is.
I know. So I'm just saying, with if the 11 pick is out there, I mean, ideally, like, I would like a linebacker, ideally, but I wouldn't be mad if they got a quarterback. I feel like with that pick, just to your point, and I actually like Carson Wentz. So I've been a Carson Wentz fan for a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I liked him. He's been different, obviously, since the injury. Like, he's been different.
Right.
So when that's not – but he's had a level of success. And even last season, if you told me a quarterback throwing about 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions – I would say that's good. Like, I don't even think it's amazing what fans try to, like, belittle. Like, I know his the game against Jacksonville, everyone remembers, right? Because he had a horrible game against Jacksonville.
It didn't end well. Yeah, the season
ended
didn't
horribly,
end well.
Right? That's just call it for what it is. Like, he looked horrible, right? It's the Jaguars. Everyone thought you're making the playoffs. They no one was thinking like you weren't gonna make the playoffs. And then you have that game. That's the game that people remember. But in the totality of your season, 27-7 is pretty good. I'm making it sound like pretty good is like it's okay. Like, it was freaking amazing. Like, 27-7 is good. Are good stats. I don't care what your situation is. Like, I don't care you have Jonathan Taylor as your running back. Like, I can give you a bunch of trash quarterbacks that have a decent running back, that have a good running back, and don't put up those numbers. So, all right. So 27-7 is pretty good. And with all that being said, to your point, Karita, like, he does do things that he gets hurt. Like, he does get hurt because he
and that's just a reality. Yeah. I mean, it's it's bad luck for him.
And here.
But that just seems to be the reality. And you have to think about it. We hope he doesn't get hurt.
Of course.
But you do have to keep that in mind. Uh-huh. And with Taylor Heineke as your backup. And if you look at Washington historically in the draft, they always let the board kind of come to them, right?
Yeah.
So if there's a quarterback that's still that they are interested in, that's still available when they pick in the first round, and even if they pick in the second round,
yeah,
I can see them taking it.
Yeah, I'm telling you this. Like, if Kenny Pickett, or I know fans won't like if I say this, but I don't care. If Malik Willis is out there, I'm taking him. I'm fine with taking him.
Oh, yeah. You got to take Malik Willis. Yeah. If he is still there at 11 and you don't take him, that's just not a good decision.
I'm like this. Like, obviously, like, this organization is trash in terms of, I'm sorry. It is what it is. In terms of what talent is or whatever. If the Steelers like Malik Willis and think he can be their guy, then that tells me, like, all right, you ain't better than the Steelers. I don't even care what you trying to, what Kool-Aid you drinking. Like, if the Steelers think he could be a future quarterback and can be the heir apparent to Big Ben, then that tells you enough. Like, that tells me they feel like they have the coaching in place and the structure in place to make sure that kid is successful.
But listen to this. Uh-huh. Another aspect of that, Malik Willis.
Uh-huh.
So besides his talent, if you think about that video that came out when he was at the combine.
Yeah, so yeah.
Right? So for Washington, truth be told, that's the kind of guy they need.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah, like, just you.
when it comes to a positive visibility and just overall positive vibe, that's what they do need. Now, the thing that scares me about that is, for whatever reason, there is some sort of dysfunction that always seems to follow this franchise.
True. So true.
And so I wouldn't want that to tarnish what his ability could be in the NFL. That would be my only concern with him in particular.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Seat right now. I'm chatting with founder of Double Take Sports and Three Point Conversions, Washington Commander reporter, Karita Parks. So, I agree with you, Karita. I mean, I do agree with you about the organization and the drama. I also am not a big fan of the coaching for Malik Willis, to be honest with you. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing that bothers me more than anything about him coming here. Like,
did Scott Turner really bring out his
the best in, of
talent?
Him? Yes. That's right. What I'm – that's what I need. Absolutely. So I know everyone who listens to me, they know that I'm a Scott – I mean, I claim it. I don't even hide it. Like, I'm a Scott Turner basher. Like, whatever you want – hater, whatever you want to call me. I'm that. I am that person, okay? Let's not call it. Let's call a spade. I am that person. All right? You want to say I'm a hater? I claim it. I will take it and run with it. But I just don't. I don't trust him. Like with a Malik Willis. I don't think he's the. Because Malik, to me, Malik Willis, when you do come from a smaller school, he did. I mean, he started off at a big school and didn't work out. Went to a smaller school and started to show out a little bit. When you do go to a smaller school. You do need a little bit more work to work with it because competition is different. Now, iron sharpens iron. That's just a fact. So, but if you are, not saying limited, if that's the case, you're coming from a smaller school, you do need the best teaching, right? Or the best offensive mind to help you out, to kind of work with you or put you in situations to be successful. So I'm not sure they have that here for this kid to kind of, to start off on a good, a fast track.
Also, look at Dwayne Haskins. Now, he was his own worst enemy in some cases. But he also needed some work as well. And they didn't really have the patience to do the work when it came to him. And I will also say with Malik Willis, he doesn't need to be a starter necessarily in his rookie year.
No, he doesn't.
But he deserves to start in this league. Oh. And the thing with Washington is if Carson Wentz has a good season, they're not going to move away from Carson Wentz.
Oh, no. Yeah.
The following season. So he could end up being stuck in that backup role for longer than I think he should be.
Yeah, but that gives you collateral then. You know what I mean? Like, you can now make Malik Willis trade bait. You can trade him somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so it's just, to me, they're in a situation where beggars can't be choosers, man. Like, this organization needs a young boy to be the quarterback. Like, Carson Wentz is still young.
I would love it, but I am with you. Whoever they choose, but particularly Malik Willis, but whoever they get, that's going to be the question, I think, with any of these guys. Can Scott Turner bring out the best in them?
Yeah, that's the only time will tell. It really will, because I'm not sure. I don't believe in that dude, man. You already know, man. I just don't. I'm gonna keep that.
You didn't even have nothing to say. Only time will tell.
Only time will tell. I don't believe in him. Hey, Karita, before I let you go, and I appreciate you for being on. Please let our listeners know how they can catch you on social media, and also about your podcast, your multiple podcasts now, and just, you know, any kind of content that you want to just put out there, because you're just doing it. You're doing it big. You're big time.
I'm trying to do it every aspect. So make sure you follow me on social media at Karita C. Parks. That's on all platforms. You can find all my work on that page, but particularly on Instagram, you can also follow at Parks PR. That's my PR company, but I put out a lot of sports PR videos. So I look at the perspective of PR when it comes to hot sports topics. Also follow Double Take Sports. That's where I write thought pieces. And the social media for that is at DBL Take Sports. That's also all platforms. And last but not least, cannot forget my Wizards podcast, the Triple W Pod. So follow that at Triple W Pod on Twitter. Yeah, I got a lot going on.
You got a lot. You know, man, she's doing it big. Big things popping out here,
but
man.
I will say, I will repeat, if you follow at Karita C. Parks, all of that content appears.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hey, Karita, thanks for being on. You know, I appreciate you.
I appreciate you having me.
All right. Take care. Stay blessed.
You too.
All right. Bye. Again, that's Karita Parks. Make sure you check her out on Twitter at Karita C. Parks. She's dope. She's a dope individual. All right. Talk Nats' Kevin Nibley will join me to talk about the Nats' offseason moves and the Nats retiring Ryan Zimmerman's jersey after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Saint for Aegis. You dig? Deuces. You know it's all about the power! Are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T are out, and we are part of Ampire Media at ampiremedia.com. All right, now we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. What's good, Kevin?
Hey, Wole, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good. You know, it's interesting. It's wild how baseball is now working out. We had like a strike, and now all of a sudden everything's going on right now, and all these moves are happening. Like I'm like, oh wow, okay, like oh, like people, they're not wasting any time making these moves happen.
Yeah, no, it was fast and furious as soon as they made the deal. Lots of signings, trades, everything.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like initially, like. Freddie Freeman's not in Atlanta anymore. Didn't think that would ever happen. It's like I didn't think that was even possible. The Braves making a trade to get Olsen from the A's. I'm like, okay.
It's tough for the Braves fans. You know, they win the World Series, and before they even get to do their banner raising, face of their franchise is lowballed and goes to LA. Baseball's a tough business, and Atlanta did the move they thought they had to make to kind of get younger and maybe a little bit cheaper there for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of plate discipline, one of the better hitters in baseball, that's kind of, I don't know if that's the, he's definitely a young and power hitter in Olsen, but Freeman's special. He's a different type of dude. He really is. He's a different type of dude. But let's get to the Nats. I don't want to talk about the Braves. I want to talk about the Nats.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get into like some of the offseason moves for the Nats are retiring Ryan Zimmerman's jersey. Your thoughts when you heard the announcement?
I think that's a great move for them. Obviously, Ryan is the face of the franchise, has been the face of the franchise for, over 15, 16 years now, since he debuted in the mid-2000s. This Nats season, as we've been seeing on Twitter with some of the people replied, this might not be like the year for the Nats. So I think any move like that, a feel-good event like that where the fans can really celebrate Ryan, that's good for the franchise. Sadly, one of the things with COVID is a lot of we didn't really get to celebrate the World Series in 2019, maybe the way we could have. As Nats fans, so something like this in 2022, where we can make a big deal out of Ryan's retirement, I think will be a positive, for the fan base for sure.
What is your favorite Ryan Zimmerman memory or moment?
He had a lot of great ones on the way up, but I'm gonna choose the one in 2019 when he hit that home run off of Gerrit Cole in Game One of the World Series. The Astros were heavily favored. I want to say the score is 2-0 at that point, Astros. And as a Nats fan, you're thinking, maybe we got as far as we could this year. We're probably not going to beat Houston. Maybe they're just too good. And also, Gerrit Cole was considered to be superhuman in that series. And, the announce, I think like Joe Buck and, John Schmaltz or whatever, they're loving Garrett Cole, and he's like the greatest pitcher he's ever lived. And then like Ryan hits this just bomb to center field, and Cole throws his hands up like a child, like before the ball's even left the yard. It was like right when it came off of Ryan's bat, he throws his hands up in frustration. And that was kind of that moment, you know, like in a movie Predator when the Predator bleeds, you know, and you're like, okay, wait a second, like we can hit this guy. And then, you know, the Nats blew that game out and they won the first two games in Houston. So that's, for me, one of my favorites. He's had a bunch of walk-offs, but that one I think was my favorite for sure. And you know, on that, also in that 2019 run, he hit I want to say a 3-run homer in game 4 against the Dodgers in the NLDS that really kind of sealed that game. And those were two huge hits during that run.
And I mentioned this those are all good ones. And I mentioned this on a prior show, once we heard the news that he was retiring, that, you know, what I remember most about him is just, you know, before the injury and the throwing issues, he was one of the best third basemen, period. Like, and I feel like we lost, you know, folks kind of, we forget about that now, right? But when he was coming up, he was like one of the best, like compared to like Brooks Robinson, you know what I'm saying? Like he was that good. Talking about a guy was smooth with the glove. He made everything seem so easy. Kind of, and I'm going to use another, I'm an Orioles fan, so I'm going to use this comparison. He reminded me of Kyle, the shortstop. Like they just kind of made things so easy. It was so effortless. Like when they, like any like diving play, just there was no panic. He was just smooth at third. I just wish that he could have, you know, stayed healthy in terms of the arm issues or whatnot, and been able to stay in that position.
For sure, yeah. He got a cortisone shot. I want to say it's like 2010, 2011, somewhere in there. It's all getting fuzzy. I'm getting older, but it was somewhere around there. And when he came back, it's just his throwing motion and accuracy just wasn't what it had been before. I mean, it was a little rough. You had to kind of go underhand and not a lot of gas on it. You know, so they obviously moved him to first. And yeah, he was on pace for probably a Hall of Fame career as a third baseman before that injury. But one thing I loved about him is it wasn't like he quit. You know, it wasn't like he just gave it up when he couldn't play third anymore. He moved to first. During the 2014 playoff run, they actually had him coming off the bench that year. He never complained. He like took a back seat. Rendon had moved over to third, and Asdrubal Cabrera, I believe, they brought in to play second. Ryan came off the bench. It wasn't a distraction. Just a great professional teammate, player, everything. You know, everything you could want from a face of the franchise. I think for the Nats, he was like this generation's David Wright. You know, he was a guy that, you know, maybe not always the best player on the team every year, but he's, you know, maybe one of the best examples, best leaders, you know, on the team every year for sure.
Oh, well, you already know how much I respected Brian Zimmerman. I always wanted him to start at first. I would always complain he should be starting. Like, you remember, I used to always tweet that. He should be starting. Even when he, you know, when folks were like, there are better options. Like, no, Ryan should start. He's hot enough. He should start. But again, Ryan Zimmerman, so happy for him. I'm glad he's getting this that day of acknowledgement. It's well-deserved. All right, so the Nationals have made several offseason moves. I can talk about him, but I want to know what's your favorite offseason move for from the Nats this offseason.
They've made a several moves. You know, obviously Nelson Cruz is the one that
love him. I love it.
Will have he'll have the most impact in terms of run scoring. You know, he's 41. I think he turns 42 during the season. But, you know, I mean, he's still hitting 30, 40 home runs a year, you know, and I imagine they'll slot him in right after Soto, you know, and it'll give Soto some protection. So maybe Soto won't get walked quite as much. And then also, I think Soto's like a fan of his. He seemed very excited to, you know, be playing with Nelson Cruz. And you know, a big part of this Nats season is going to be whether they can extend and, you know, re-sign Juan Soto long term. So to make a move like that for a guy that Soto would, you know, enjoy playing with, that's a great move. So that's the headliner. Aside from that, you know, I don't necessarily think the Nats are trying to, they're not trying to compete this year the way they had in the past. The Nats are rebuilding, you know, barring just a crazy set of, you know, like 1990 Cleveland Indians from the movie Major League kind of things happening, you know, like the Nats are probably finishing fourth or fifth this year. And the division's really going to be between the Braves, the Mets, and the Phillies. But you know, they did some feel good things for the fans. They're bringing back Annabelle Sanchez,
yeah, saw that.
And Sean Doolittle and Gerardo Parra. You know, I don't know if any of those three will really make a difference in wins and losses, but, you know, it could. Sanchez looked good, you know, his first spring game. I guess people are saying he's throwing the ball well in his workout. Uh-huh. I don't know. You know, they've made a lot of little marginal moves, like Steve Shisek, the reliever, Cesar Hernandez, second baseman. A rough pronunciation, but I believe it's A-Ray Adreanza from the Braves. He's like a utility infielder. He's also on the Twins. They got a bunch of depth pieces, all veterans, all one-year deals. So, you know, if they do need to sell them at the deadline again, they can. And I think that's just basically what the Nats' strategy this offseason was. A lot of short-term deals. You know, there's a world where if Strasburg and Corbin both pitch well, and Josiah Gray and maybe Kay Cavalli are good, that maybe they could compete a little bit. But most likely they're going to be selling off veterans who are playing well at the deadline again, getting more prospects and kind of moving further into this rebuild that they've set out on since the trade deadline last year.
Look, now you're thinking like me. I'm thinking there is something. You got some pictures that can kind of help you out. But what about remind me, because I'm not sure. You know, I'm a Fetty guy. Is Fetty still on the roster? Or he's gone.
Fetty's still there.
Okay.
He's probably going to, because Strasburg right now is taking his time coming back. He's probably not going to be ready for opening day. So Fetty, I believe, should slot in the opening rotation, at least for the first couple weeks.
Okay.
You know, and I think if he pitches well, he'll probably stay there. He's a guy, you know, a lot of this Nats season's going to be about some of these prospects who haven't quite come to fruition yet.
Of course.
Like Fetty, Robles, Kiboom.
There you go.
These kind of guys, you know, so this is probably going to be their last. Fetty, Robles, Kiboom, I think all three of them, this might be their last year to really show something, you know, to stick in the plans of this team for sure.
You're listening to the Urban Sportsing, part of Amp Papyri Media at amppapyrimedia.com. Right now we have Talk Nats, Kevin Nibley on the line. So, Kev, they have Aaron Sanchez too, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I like it. I used to like Aaron Sanchez. Thought he had potential. For you, who are some low key nice acquisitions by this team?
Low key, you know, he looked pretty good in the spring game that was on TV yesterday. But I don't know if you remember D. Strange Gordon. I think he used to just go by D. Gordon.
D. Gordon. Yeah, I know D. Gordon. He played for the Marlins at the time, right? Played the Marlins.
Yep. We got him. He looked pretty decent out there yesterday. You know, that's a guy who maybe a couple things go a certain way. He could help the team out, stay on the roster. Aside from that, you know, Shisek, I think, could be a good reliever, or he's been a good reliever in the past. He throws, like, underhand, sidearm, but he's been effective. And oddly, even after the trade deadline when they got rid of Trey and Schwarber and everyone else, then that scored a lot of runs down the stretch. It's just their bullpen was so bad, they blew so many games. So, you know, getting Shisek in there, Doolittle I'm not expecting a ton from, but you know, if you look at him, not necessarily coming in to be a closer, but he's coming in more to just replace what Sam Clay did last year, just to be a left-handed arm, come in like sixth, seventh inning, something like that. That's certainly an upgrade over Sam Clay. There are a few little things. I think, like as you mentioned, Aaron Sanchez is a nice little piece that you could use him, you know, maybe in a rotation, is, you know, or maybe out of bullpen. That seems like to be the Nats' strategy is they just bought, it's like they went to the bodega and just bought a bunch of scratchy lotto tickets.
Yeah.
And like they're just kind of hoping like some of them hit. And, you know, who knows, maybe they'll compete, but odds are they won't. But then even if these guys hit, they could then flip them, you know, send them to contenders, get more prospects, you know. And when the Nats built that, their last long 10-year run, I mean, that's kind of what they did. Way back in the day, they traded Matt Capps for Wilson Ramos.
Yep.
You know, they pull these moves. You know, they got Michael Morse from Seattle for like a song. You know, you do these little moves in this stage of the team building, and, you know, you end up with some guys that might help the team for 3-4 years, you know, really kind of get off the ground. I think for the Nats, really, they're probably looking more at like next year or even 2024 before they're really ready to take off is what it seems to be the blueprint.
Look, I mean, I'm an Orioles fan. We did that with Buck. I'm just saying, we did that with Buck. We got a lot of bargains. Nelson Cruz is one of them. Like, folks didn't believe. They were like, Nelson Cruz, all right, you're getting all these type of players that are vets but aren't really, you know, ain't the guys that you need to win win baseball games, and he helped them win. They got a bunch of, to the point what you're referring to, a bunch of guys, like lotto ticket guys. Then all of a sudden they panned out, and they won the East. They won the AL East, you know what I mean, with the Yankees in there.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, I get, like, where fans are coming from, but just this, like, we all have watched baseball for years. It's not even – there are certain recipes that help you win baseball games. There's a reason why the A's compete 24/7. There's a reason why.
Yep.
There is a recipe. Like, it just – and the Nats have individuals, if they play to their capabilities. What I'm talking about is in Corbin and Stras. If they – say Stras is healthy and Corbin plays to the level he's supposed to – he usually plays, but other than, like, the last couple of seasons, or last year definitely.
Yeah.
That – They can be a solid team. Now, I'm not saying can they beat the Mets. On paper, look scary, right? The Braves are defending champions, so you have to respect that. But if things go the way that they're supposed to, and you have a superstar in Soto, not a star, you have a superstar in Soto, there is an opportunity to compete. Like, I think we all kind of look at the problem, I think, with, like, a lot of baseball fans and people who've been tweeting, and I get it. You want to have, like, the Yankees super squad or the Dodgers super squad. Not everybody has those type of teams. If you really look at the Braves last season, to be honest with you, barring a couple players, their key player went down, they were still able to win the World Series. So all I'm saying that if certain things go well, if Robles gives you 75% of his potential, if Keyboom does, you know, same thing, 75%. If the light bulb switches, right, and clicks, and then boom, then you are in a better situation than what people ought to right now think. You know what I mean?
There's I guess not to quote, like, Luke Russert, you know, he's like a Nats fan, his dad, Tim Russert, he's always talking about the inside straight in politics of, like, you know, you need, like, these exact things to happen to win. It's sort of what the Nats need, an inside straight. That inside straight is Strasburg and Corbin going back to 2019 levels. Josiah Gray and Cade Cavalli, who looked really good in spring the other day.
Yeah.
You know, if those two, even if one of the two of them can really latch on and be an impact, you know, rookie or first, I guess Gray would be a second year player, but be an impact young arm in the rotation. And then maybe, you know, you get one of the two Sanchez's is like a decent four starter, and somehow you plug in the fifth between Fetty and everyone else, you know, Ross, whoever, you know, then that's not that bad a rotation. I mean, you have to, and that's won the World Series 3 years ago with Stras and Corbin, and with ERAs right around three.
Yes.
You know, so it's not impossible. Is it likely? Probably not.
Certainly
not impossible.
Yeah, that's my thing. It's just not impossible. I've seen worse squads, put it that way. I just want baseball fans. I've seen worse. Like, and I've seen worse make it to the postseason. That's all I'm saying. I've seen worse make it to the postseason. You know, and there's like, I'm always amazed how the A's make it, like, to be honest with you. I'm always amazed how the A's make it, and they do. Kevin, before I let you go, can you let our listeners know how they can catch on social media and also how they can catch your content?
Yeah, for sure. I'm just @K_Nibley on Twitter. I had a lot of baseball posts, some movie posts, things like that. Talk Nats. I'm a regular contributor to that site. It's just talknats.com. It's the best place on the internet to learn about the Washington Nationals, really in-depth stuff. And again, is it in a transitional year where we're going to have a lot of new face, a lot of rookies, a lot of you know, people that aren't household names? That's probably the best place you can go to really get in the weeds and learn every little thing about every new, you know, the next wave of the next great Nats team. And yeah, that's pretty much what I have going on right now. Thanks as always, man. Always a pleasure.
Oh, Kevin, it's always a pleasure having you on. And I will be, you know, I'm excited for our fantasy baseball event.
I know, so you got to activate your team.
I will. And I'm going to do that. Thank you for reminding me. Thank you for reminding me. I'm going to do that as soon as the show is over. Trust me.
We had a playoff. I think we had like the craziest playoff matchup last year.
We did. Look, I was gloating to my other co-host. Like, I was telling him, see, I'm a baseball savant. I'm in the playoffs. I was like, I didn't even, and I was like, I I just got a bunch of free agents and I kind of mixed the match and I got into the playoffs. And then I was like, I was arrogant. I was confident. I thought I was going to win. I'm not going to lie to you, Kev. I thought I was going to
win. You should have won. I got lucky. I had like the luckiest string of, I had like about 20 things happen that needed to happen.
Oh, man. So it was fun, though.
You should have been in the finals for sure.
It was fun, though. It definitely was fun. I will activate my team. Trust me.
All right. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
No problem. All right. Thanks, Kev. You have a good one. All right. I'll catch you later.
All right. You too.
All right.
Yep.
All right, again, that's Kevin Nibley on Talk Nats. So make sure you check him out. TalkNats.com. So make sure you check him out. All right, March Madness talk. I will predict who advances, past, the Sweet 16 after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Thing for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Ball is ticked, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. And all the years, no one knows just how hard you worked. But now it shows in one shining moment. It's all on the line. In one shining moment, they're frozen. Time is short, and the road is long. In the blinking of an eye, that moment's gone. And when it's done, win or lose, you always did your best. 'Cause inside you knew that in one shining moment, you reached deep inside. One shining moment. Feel the wind in your face. It's more than a contest. It's more.
Man, who don't like one shining moment, man? That thing is lit. Ray and Will get on me, but maybe it's Will, but one shining moment is amazing. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray, and Will TR out, and we are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com. All right, so I was going to talk about some March Madness. There have been a lot of upsets in the tournament. I had Kentucky get into the Final Four. Then St. Peter's wanted to mess up the church's money. Also, North Carolina wanted to be the good Tar Heels by beating Baylor in the second round. I'm telling you, Carolina better keep that same energy throughout this postseason, because during the season they were so inconsistent. Well, now, you know what? I feel kind of froggy. I feel kind of good. I will attempt to predict who wins and advances to the Final Four. So, you know, let me get situated. All right. And also, feel free to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and at Urban Sports Scene and comment about this on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. All right. So I'm looking through it. I'm gonna make these moves. I'll make this happen. All right. You got Gonzaga, Arkansas. Gonzaga's been kind of shaky, I'm not going to lie. And truth be told, when I was doing my bracket, I wanted to pick Memphis to beat Gonzaga. I was this close. But I'm going to go Gonzaga over Arkansas. Texas Tech, Duke. It's Coach K's special season, right? I'm going to go with Duke. Carolina, UCLA. I'm going to give this to Carolina. Then Carolina beats UCLA. Purdue, St. Peter's. St. Peter's. Ooh. I'm going to go Purdue. I think St. Peter's, I think it ends there. I think it ends for St. Peter's. Arizona, Houston. I'm going with Arizona. Michigan, Villanova. I think I had Nova winning, but I'm going to go in my own bracket. But I'm going to go with Michigan. Michigan's hot. Kansas versus Providence. I'm going to go with Kansas. Iowa State, Miami. Miami look good. I'm going to go with Miami. I got Arizona. You know, I got Arizona beating Michigan in the Final Four. I got Kansas in the Final Four. I got I'm gonna go with North Carolina in the Final Four. I'm gonna go with Gonzaga in the Final Four. Those will be my Final Four teams. My man on Twitter, my man Cam, Killer Cam. He did tweet me. Try and look at it. Killer Cam tweet. He tweeted the team about he gave us his predictions. I'm trying to show respect to Killer Cam. Let's see my man Killer Cam. Yo, Killer. Here we go. All right, Cam. Cam has Gonzaga, Texas Tech, UNC, Purdue, Arizona, Nova, Kansas, Miami. Those are the teams that he has advancing to the Elite Eight. His Final Four teams are Gonzaga, UNC. He says my UNC Tar Heels, Arizona, and Kansas. Hey, appreciate you, Cam, man. Hey, also, make sure y'all tweet Cam at Cam Mingo, which is at CamMingo. Tweet my man, all right? Show him some love, man. You're a dope dude. So those are my picks. That's my Final Four. So, yeah. Again, let me repeat my Final Four, if I can remember my Final Four. I said Arizona, Gonzaga, right, Arizona, UNC, and Kansas. Boom, that's my Final Four. All right, as part of our new segment, HBCU Corner, Norfolk State Guard, and MEAC Player of the Year, Joe Bryant Jr. will jump on the show after the break and listen to the Urban Sports site for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Southern University.
What's up with y'all?
Alabama State. Damn you. Clark Atlanta.
You look good to be back.
I shake your money maker. Don't let that money maker. I shake that money maker. Don't let that money make it. Oh, shake your money maker. Don't let that money make it. I shake that money maker. Don't let that money make it, baby.
Let go.
Yeah. I shake that money maker.
Money.
Don't let that money make it. You know I accommodate you, and I accommodate you. I make you cool. I know you're home lately. I turn your curly hair into that bone straightener. I make you moan, baby.
Oh.
It feel right, don't it? I know I'm wrong, baby.
Oh.
That pheromone fragrance. Can't miss no car payments.
Oh.
I kiss her earlobe. Like what you doing lately?
What you doing?
The broken alligator. Them lanes agitator.
Oh.
I'm talking out your beauty. No makeup applicator.
Don't need.
She say I killed the... I seen the affidavit. She blew my cap off like I had graduated. The roof decapitated, the booth contaminated.
Damn.
Hey, check my face card. I bet it's laminated.
True.
My jewelry carbonated. My yard 100 acres.
Uh-huh.
I like the nomination. To roll my dice in Vegas.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T are out, and we are part of Ampire Media at ampiremedia.com. I mean, this is a dope time. This is a dope segment. Kind of geeked. All right, we are bringing out our new segment called HBCU Corner. Here we will spotlight coaches and players within HBCU athletics. Here is an interview with Norfolk State guard Joe Bryant Jr. This interview was recorded earlier today. I would like to say that this dude is a dope dude. I mean, I think big things popping for him. So, hey, just tune in.
Welcome to HBCU Corner. Right now, we have Norfolk State University's men's basketball guard and MEAC Player of the Year, Joe Bryant Jr. on the show. What's up, Joe? Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, my man.
What's up? How you doing? Appreciate you.
Oh, no problem, man. Pleasure to have you on. So before we, get to the nitty gritty, some of the stuff, I'm gonna ask you some real tough questions, though. Some real easy, some tough little Barbara Walter-ish type of questions. All right. So first off, who's your favorite musical artist?
Lil Baby.
See, I'm a T.I. dude. That's cool. It's cool. All right. Who's your favorite hooper?
LeBron.
LeBron. All right. That's your goat.
Yeah, it's my goat.
Okay, you know what? I'm mad. Magic's my goat, and I've always, folks who love Jordan, I'm like, the reason why I love LeBron so much because he reminds me of Magic Johnson. All right, So, favorite basketball team?
I'm a Bron guy, so wherever Bron go, I go. So.
Okay, no, I respect that. I respect that. I root for Bron. I ain't gonna lie. You know, I'm a Lakers fan. Like I said, I grew up a Lakers fan, and when we came to LA, I was boosted because I wanted him since I saw him as a rookie. I was like, this dude needs to be a Laker.
Yeah, all right.
No what?
Yeah, I don't like when people, you know, doubt Bron. Like, I take that to heart. Like, that's really my favorite player.
Bruh, they're haters. That's why. They're haters. Yeah. You know what I mean? Anytime a player goes from place to place and their team wins championships, this is my thing. When LeBron leaves, see how those teams perform. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. All right. I'm probably biased. Who has the best homecoming? You HBCU dude. Who has the best homecoming?
Norfolk State, of course.
Look, you shouldn't hesitate. You shouldn't hesitate. You hesitate a little too long on that one, though.
Nah, the connection messed up a little bit.
I got you. No problem, man. All right, Norfolk State. All right, so so this is a good one. This is one. All right, I know Coach Jones will probably watch this show. All right, who wins the game 1-on-1, you or Coach Jones?
Me. Without question.
You said me.
Without question.
Not a question. That's dope. All right, man. Well, since we've already did some of like the fun questions and whatnot, let's get right into it. Last year you were BAC most outstanding player in the conference tournament, and you followed that up with that award, and you got MEAC player of the year this season. Can you talk about your motivation going into this season? Going to like the current season?
My mind just been focused on getting back to the NCAA tournament. You know, the off season, I was in the weight room heavy. I was in the gym heavy. You know, just working on my game, trying to get myself better, and you know, just taking it one game at a time. First couple of games, I had some good games. Had a couple 20-point games. Then we played Xavier. I didn't do so well. So you know, I had to look myself in the mirror and get myself right. And locked back in, and then that carried on for the rest of the season.
Dope. So you're back-to-back MEAC tournament champions, and you won a division this season. Can you talk about that accomplishment?
Say it one more time.
All right, you're back-to-back MEAC tournament champions, and you won the division this year. Can you talk about that accomplishment?
You know, it means a lot. You know, bringing championships back to the city, back to the school. You know, and also sharing memories with my teammates and my coaches. You know, they go to war with me every day, every practice, every game. You know, I'll take these group of guys over anybody.
Dope. So you mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, doing for the city. You are from Norfolk. So is there any pressure, you know, being from Norfolk and then actually representing, you know, the university like that?
No, you know, I don't feel no pressure at all.
Okay.
You know, I feel like the city of Norfolk has my back, whether, you know, through the ups and the downs. You know, they basically my family. I have a huge family, and, you know, they treat me as such.
Dope. So I mentioned, you know, we're talking a little bit before, and I mentioned how, you know, you helped build this program 2 years, you know, of great play, not just good play, but great play. And this program to me is projecting like back to back, you know, tournament appearances for Norfolk State and University, and you're part of it. Do you have some sense of pride knowing your role in building and in helping build this program?
Yeah. Well, first is to start with the older guys before me, the guys who taught me the ropes and taught me how to, you know, lead Norfolk State's championships. So by them giving me those mental nuggets, I use that and into my career and helping the guys that come after me, you know, keep up that culture. Norfolk State is a winning culture. I'm all about winning. So, you know, that goes hand in hand. So, you know, I feel like my job is to, you know, help the guys that come after me, you know, be great.
So what, for in terms, and I mentioned Coach Jones, what has Coach Jones meant to you as a coach and a mentor?
It means a lot. You know, he took a chance on me. You know, he didn't have to. So, you know, I always appreciate him for that. And, you know, he stuck with me. You know, as a freshman, I didn't play a lot. You know, I had guys before me that started over me, and you know, they were good, so you know, I couldn't complain about that. But I still was a great teammate my freshman year, and then those guys that started over me, they transferred, so you know, that opened spots up for me to, you know, to take over the starters responsibility my sophomore year. Uh-huh. And you know, Coach Jordan just took me under his wing. You know, he helped me a lot. You know, with defense, you know, he's a big defensive guy. So he just been helping me work on my defense and just helping me as I move on to my career.
And you mentioned, and we've talked about, obviously, you know, getting to the tournament, you played Baylor this season, but how was that experience, you know, back-to-back, you know, being in the NCAA tournament? Now, a lot of individuals, you know, you could say, you know, didn't get past the first round, but not a lot of people get that experience.
Right. Well, the one last year and this year, they're kind of different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because last year, COVID was huge back then, last year. So, you know, we had to get tested every day, had a quarantine when we first got there for like 2 days. So, you know, things were different. This year, it's much different. We had to get tested. There was a lot of fans in there. So it basically felt like COVID wasn't around.
Mm.
You know, so, you know, the police escorts were still the same, private plane, you know, just like I said, just memories I get to share with my teammates and my coaches.
And also, I saw this on Twitter, and I thought it was pretty dope. Like, to me, your pops is like your biggest supporter. And so, can you talk about that? I just love how, just looking through, because I was looking for you on Twitter trying to promote, but then I saw your pops, and I was like, oh, this is dope. Like, he is a big-time supporter of his son, and I just appreciate that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, he's like that with all my siblings. Mm-hmm. You know, most of my siblings play sports. So, you know, whenever they have a game, he's there loud. He front row every game. You know, that means a lot. You know, I got to have a big support system like my father and my mother, as long as my grandparents. So, you know, he's basically my role model.
Awesome, man. And so, you know, out to me, I'm all about a kid, especially I mean, playing basketball. I coach ball too as well anyway. And I'm always about progression. You've shown progression. Your journey is not over, but what's next for you?
I don't know. I haven't made a decision yet. Uh-huh. You know, I do still have 1 year of eligibility. So, I mean, I haven't had a talk with Coach Jones yet, you know, to talk about that. So I'm still eager to see what he says and eager to see what he thinks and, you know, just move on from there.
And this is called HBCU Corner. And so I want to talk about the importance of playing in an HBCU, being an HBCU too. So for you, how important it is for you to play ball in an HBCU and also just being on an HBCU campus?
It means a lot, you know, because, you know, HBCUs have talent, you know. You don't always have to go to a big Power 5 school like Duke or whatever to, you know, to be successful. You can come to MEAC, the SWAC, you know, all those schools, HBCUs that showcase that talent, and I'm there right front and center, and that means a lot to me.
Well, you definitely showcased your talent. Thanks for being on the show and also being part of HBCU Corner. Is there anything you would like to add?
Nah, I'm good.
All right, man. Well, appreciate you, man. You stay blessed and keep up the great work.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, that kid's dope. That kid gonna do special things, man. You know, he got 1 more year eligibility. It'd be dope. He has, you know, spend that time with Coach. Because I think they have something they're building special up there at Norfolk State. So hopefully, you know, he plays ball over there and they can do something like shock the world. And maybe, you know, the NCAA will show Norfolk State that respect. And when if they do win the MEAC tournament and win the division again, have them over a 16 seed. I'm sick of the NCAA disrespecting the MEAC. We're seeing progression in the MEAC, and we need to start. They need to start showing us our respect. And I say us because, as you know, I went to the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and you know we rep it over here. HBCU Corner ain't just a thing; it's real. We out here representing the HBCUs out here. So hopefully, you know, the NCAA will show us our respect, and so when we put a team out there that has kind of checked the boxes in terms of seeding at a higher level. Now, no one's asking for a 10 seed or anything like that, but, you know, 14, 15, 14 seed. Look what this 15 seed is doing in the tournament now in St. Peter's, and they're in the Sweet 16, having the opportunity to get to the Elite Eight. So it's just saying, show us our respect, man. Give us what we owe. You know what I'm saying? Give it to us, man. You owe us that. Give it to us. Anyway, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Amplifier Media, at amplifiermedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Amplifier shows as well as other great content. Hey, man, this has been a dope show. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Hope, you know, next week we plan on having the homies back. You know what I'm saying? Will T and Ray Jeezy. So we'll have a full roster. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene. For ages. A Yeti. A Deuces. A Mega. Do me a favor, bro. Lead us out, big homie.